And we are back. Episode number 65 of Black and a Half. This is Manny is on leave today because today is a very special edition. It is an all Game of Thrones episode. So if you have not seen the finale of Game of Thrones, go ahead and listen to last week's episode again until you listen to it repeatedly until you are caught up with Game of Thrones. And or if you don't care, you can just listen to us talk about Game of Thrones. I have two special super fans here today. A returning guest, comedian Joseph Greenhour.
Hello. Thank you for having me back.
And I'm going to call him social media specialist Aaron Krupp.
That's me.
Aaron, I met at AFK. If those of you may remember, I did this nerd show, comedy show, a weekly show down at AFK. What was it? Tavern and
Elixirs and Eatery.
Elixirs and Eatery down in Kent.
Renton.
Right? Was it Renton?
It was.
It's on the border, right?
Yeah.
That was close. Okay.
I like so that
down
place.
In Renton. It was great. It was a great, great bar. I met Aaron there and we've stayed in touch and online. We nerd out about different things together. And we were going to have, you know, I did make announcements before about other people that were going to be on the show, which I never do, and this is why, because we had scheduling problems, plane delays, phones dying, couldn't get him here. So, like the Game of Thrones itself, this is an all-male commentary section on it.
Oh, yeah.
So, I did want to ask, so Joe, did you read Game of Thrones?
Yeah, I've read the books, but, you know, I mean, there's, like, the unwritten books, the unpublished books I've clearly not read.
Right. But
read all the way up to the last one published. Yeah.
You were in, is that, that's how you were introduced to it? Or did the.
Well, somebody I knew, a friend of mine told me that he had read in like Hollywood Reporter or Variety, one of those industry rags, that HBO picked up the contract for the book. So he's like, oh, dude, I was reading this book. We should read these books because it's going to be on HBO. And, you know, they'll probably do a good job because they're already pretty popular with their shows before this show,
yeah.
Even though the show is immensely popular.
Okay. And so you did you finish it before it came out or?
Yeah, I read all the books like as soon as they were published. And then the last one, where did it ends? Like in a weird spot. I think, was it right when Jon Snow gets attacked by the Night's Watch? I think that's where it ends.
I couldn't tell you. I've only read through the third book.
The third book is, in my opinion, the best one because it's, you know, the Red Wedding book. That's the one where...
Oh, okay.
Now you spoiled it. I don't know. I wasn't expecting that.
And so how were you introduced to it?
I was actually introduced before the second season started. I waited through the entire first season and heard that it was getting big, but didn't know a whole lot about it. Decided that I was going to go back and read the books before I watched the series. But got the Blu-ray of season one. If in the meantime, I started reading through the book, then I got too tempted by the series and I was like, I'll just watch up to where I've read so far.
Yeah.
But the Dany storyline progresses much faster on the show than it does in the books. Okay. And I started seeing scenes that I had not read yet. And I was like, screw it. I'm just going to watch the whole first season. And then from then on at season two, I was, watching all the rest of it, but I have only gotten halfway through the third book though. Okay. Reading wise.
Then I have not read the books at all. Partly because, okay, so I wasn't that. I think I didn't start watching it until like season four, maybe. I only watched it because I'd met Sally Jordan, a local comic here in Seattle, and she was. We hit it off through Buffy. You know, we loved Buffy together. We would talk about Buffy a lot, and she was like, I love Game of Thrones too. And I was like, oh, okay. And so I kind of trusted her opinion on that. So then I decided to give it a try. For me, it was just like it's another Middle Ages story with no black people. That's what it looked like to me. And so I wasn't interested. And then, so I got a hold of a password. And so I started to start checking it out. And then I was hooked. The first episode starts with a bang, right? Well, at least the end of the episode, yeah. And then what was funny to me is the whole time I had always seen memes going out, you know, the you know, the Winter is Coming playoff of that with Ned Stark. And I always thought he was the main character of the show.
He was set up to look like it.
Yeah. And so when they cut his head off, that I was hooked at that point. Because I was like, what? Well, what's the show about? I thought it was about him.
You get invested in him, and get invested in him as a character, and then, they're gone.
Well, and especially they hire someone like Sean Bean that at least has name recognition compared to a lot of the rest of the cast. So that you're like, oh, this is the guy that
they
have.
They promoted the show around him a lot.
They did.
Yeah. Like, you know, starring Sean Bean. He probably read that script for the whole first season. He knew. When he took it. And I bet you, man, if you know that your character is getting zapped at the end, you know, you got to have some, there's got to be some fun to be had there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you're Sean Bean, you've sort of come to expect it at that point.
Yeah.
He's died so many times in so many ways.
That's true. He does seem to get killed a lot.
You know, I wonder, similar, it's funny. I'm not going to talk about Lost, but I'm going to talk about Lost now. Like, I know, I believe it was Michael Keaton that was originally booked to play Jack. On Lost, but he was originally, they were going to kill Jack in the first like episode. And once they said, oh, no, we would say he's going to be the main character for this. He's like, I'm out of here. And he's like, no, I don't want to do a series. I just want to do a one off. And so I could see that there's probably a lot of actors who are like, oh, I like the idea of this series of doing it.
That's what I thought Michelle Yeoh was doing with Star Trek. I thought that character was going to be like just, you know, killed off and then not come back. And then, you know, like she's still on the show.
Yeah.
All this time later, you know, without spoiling the show for anybody. But that was one of those things where I really thought they were going to have the, you know, the big name actor come in for the first episode. And then, you know, then the regular crew takes it from here.
It's a degree now why I don't even, like, I avoid stuff about, I have been avoiding stuff about Game of Thrones reading because I'm like, I don't want to know. Like, oh, there's leaks.
Or you can't even log on Facebook. Like, if you want to, if it's Sunday at, like, once the show comes on, from then until I watch it, I have to not go on social media because people are just blowing
it all over. But, like, even like press, like, I didn't watch the trailer. I didn't watch anytime. Oh, press photos are released. They're released. I'm like, I don't want to see it. I don't want to know anything at all. I want to be surprised because it is such a. I used to read, like, Entertainment Weekly and always know what's coming out and who's going to be in stuff. And, now I'm like, you know, I think Game of Thrones really hit it for me was when they killed Ned. It was so unexpected for me. And I felt such joy of not knowing what's going on and what I guessed was going to happen in the show that I was like, you know what? I want that for everything. I want to just be surprised.
What's unfortunate is that was the one plot point of the series that had been spoiled for me when I decided to start the series was I knew that Ned dies. When I started season one, which was unfortunate, but it is what it is. To their credit, the trailers leading up to this, other than the very final trailer, actually did no spoils at all. Like, nothing plot wise. It was just what looks cool.
Yeah. Okay, so for the Joe, since you read the books, have there been any disappointment in watching the show? Having been reading
There's things about it's always the same thing. Like the book was better than the movie, and I think it's just whatever it is that makes books better than the movie. You know, it's the way it's written, and you have to use your imagination, and it's a different medium. You know, so if it's a good author, and then stylistically I think the show is brilliant. I think they've done a great job. They really. Like with the imagery and the music and, you know, those are two things that are just not in books.
Yeah.
So whenever you have, you know, a different, you can't make, it's apples and oranges, you know? So there's plot points where you kind of want a certain thing to happen or another thing to not happen. Or, oh, there was a lot of detail given to this character. How come they don't, you know, like in the book too, also like Tyrion, when he gets messed up in that battle, he gets like really like mutilated.
I think I had heard that.
Yeah, he gets his nose chopped off.
Like he's really gross looking now, you know?
Uh-huh.
And then like here you have Peter Dinklage, who I think is, you know, handsome man. And he's, you know, they give him like a little scar,
movie
make him look cool,
scar.
But it's like, he was like,
I mean, disfigured kind of.
Yeah. Like
they actually take a jab at that when Cersei first sees him in the prison. She's like, oh, they said you'd lost your nose, but it's not that bad. like lampshading the fact that they didn't take off his nose.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So I wonder how much that changed, you know, if they're following still the same plot points that was supposed to happen, how him being disfigured would have affected, I don't know, like his relationship with Danny.
Well, he's, you know, he's always talking about how he's the imp, you know?
Yeah.
And he's the, you know, he's got all these monstrous little names. Like, they really do a much more colorful job of describing him in the... George R.R. Martin describes stuff. Like, in the books, he's describing what they eat and what they're wearing. And, like, I mean, he's like, you know, and then so-and-so showed up in this, and it was, like, this garment with, you know, this gold inlay on top of the crest that showed the three dogs and, you know, all
really
that kind of
stuff. Really helped the costume designers, though.
Well, hell yeah. I mean, it's like a point-by-point on how to design all of these things. The amount of detail in the world that he builds. But George R. R. Martin, he's kind of like, you know, he's very rambly that way. He's giving you an image, but holy smokes, he goes on and on about the, you know, the duck confit or whatever. And it's like, dude, we don't need to know this much. You know, like, they're eating duck. That's enough.
He's a rambler. He rambles.
In the parts of the books that I've read as well, too, the way that I saw it was you watch I would watch the series and get the visceral reaction from seeing some of these twists play out in real time visually. And you watch the story and you see these characters, and then you go back and you read the books, and it's almost like the director's cut of what you just watched.
Yeah.
Of like, this is what you saw, but with way more detail. In the first season, they had a decent budget as far as HBO goes, but as far as HBO, it wasn't as intense of a budget as you would expect for a new pilot, because it was a weird fantasy thing that they didn't know if it would work. So like, there's an entire battle sequence when Tyrion gets knocked out, and then he wakes up later and the fight's over and he gets to learn the important bits of what happened. The entire battle plays out in the books because George didn't have a budget and he could just write whatever he wanted.
Yeah.
So you get the entirety of the battle in the books, but they just didn't have it at the time for season one to do that. So it's different adaptations like that, that you get the extra bits that they had to cut.
I'm really curious, like reading The Red Wedding, like when you got to that, was that like reading it, like if it was as much of a surprise or.
Well, I thought in the show and in the book, they did a really good job of showing, you know, this character, how he's kind of, you know, Ned Stark was so noble and he got offed. And then he has like his noble son, the leader of his house, going around. And you're like, dude, this guy's not, after you know they killed the other guy, you know they could kill this one. And you're watching him go about his business in this world. And you're like, dude, you should listen to your mama. She's telling you what to do, you know?
Yeah.
And there's
rules of war that they're expecting. And
that was actually one that was a plot point that they didn't really get to in the show. But Catelyn Stark comes back.
She does.
She gets the fire breathed back into her the way that
Lord of Light style.
The Lord of Light. Yeah.
Wait, Mama Stark?
Catelyn Stark comes back as Lady Stoneheart. Whose only quest for vengeance is to just kill every Frey that she sees, and has none of the mercy that Kat had in life. Yeah.
What?
She's like, she turns into like a ghoul, like that wanders the forest.
But not like, not controlled by the Night King?
No.
She comes back. From the Lord of Light. From the guy, from Beric Dondarrion.
Like Beric and Jon and all that.
Yeah.
And the guy who made the flaming swords.
George always said that when you come back, you're not the same person as you were back before you died. And that was the example
he
would.
Pet Cemetery rules.
Yeah. And that was the example he would cite, is Catelyn coming back as Lady Stoneheart was not like Catelyn Stark. That's why she has a completely different name and MO.
Yeah, she's just going around just like finding Frey men, you know, and then, you know, like they're delivering a message or whatever. They're just like,
holy crap.
And then she, and then she'll like, they'll wake up and they're tied to a tree and she's standing in front of them, right? And then she'll just slit all their throats or hang them. She's just like going around just lynching soldiers of Walder Frey.
Because I had already heard some things because seasons had passed, and I knew there was a thing called the Red Wedding, right? So I knew that there was something bad that was going to happen. I just didn't know when, and I kept thinking, sometimes I go, oh, I wonder if this is, and then as soon as the door locked, you saw the door lock at this wedding, I'm like, oh shit, this is it. What's going to happen? And then I was just shocked. But nobody had told me about, I didn't know Joff had died.
Ah, yeah.
And so I kept wanting him to die. Like, I hated, I never hated a character so much.
Everybody wanted that.
But when he died, that was more shocking to me because they had just had the Red Wedding. Mm-hmm. Right? I think that's the order, right?
Yeah. Red Wedding was the end of season three, and Joffrey was, I think, the second episode of season
four.
Oh,
yeah, and it was like, we just started this. It was so shocking for me, and I was like, this is wonderful.
The part that got me, so I was not told about the Red Wedding at all beforehand, but I did have a friend who read the books who insisted that I watch the episode with him that night, which we watched episodes together a lot, yeah. So it wasn't out of the ordinary. Had no clue that any of it was happening. Both my brother and I were there with him, and he wanted to see our reactions, which were appropriately like, what? But the thing that clued me into Joffrey's was George R. R. Martin always wrote episode 9 for every season up until that point. He wrote the screenplay for that episode.
Oh.
And with that season, with season 4, he instead chose to write episode 2's screenplay. And I'm like, that seems interesting.
But you watched for that? You watched for that?
At that point, I was very much trying to just absorb everything Game of Thrones. And I was like, what are the names of the episodes? Who's writing this episode? Like, that's how I started to clue into some of these directors. And like Miguel Sapochnik, who directed like Blackwater, the Battle of Blackwater, Hard Home. He directed the Battle of the Bastards. He directed The Long Night. Every big battle was this one director. And it's like, he's great at this. So when I saw that an episode was directed by him, I'm like, oh, this is going to be intense.
So I didn't even like sometimes I would see, you know, the little, the screenshot to show what the episode is. And I'd see the couple before and I'd still see Joffy in one. I'm like, damn it. He's still alive. I know he's going to be alive. And I think even that episode, I was like, damn, oh, he's still around.
Yeah. Joffy.
And then he died. I'm like, this is awesome.
Great.
Okay. And so, I mean, those are the big points. Got to get to, already 17 minutes in, got to talk to, so the ending, how it ended. So it just ended, and so the internet won't shut up about it.
Neither will we, apparently.
Happy? Sad? How'd you feel about that?
I'm okay with it. I think with a show like this, with just the scope of the characters and the sprawling nature of it, and like you said, you never know who's important and who's going to get killed off. It's kind of like this symphony that hits all these very weird chords, and then you want it to resolve. We naturally want it to resolve. If we know the show is ending, we want it to end in a way that's, it's got to stick. You couldn't end it like, you know, like if Daenerys like came to town and then burned a bunch of people and then they just kind of ended it there. Like, you could maybe end it that way. I mean, I don't know. They have to really, it's got to have a finality to it. The show's got a following, and it's a lot of pressure. And with the, when, you know, with all these different plot lines sprawling all over the place, it's like fusing rope. It came out a little ugly, I think. You know, it wasn't a smooth landing, but they did stick it.
Yeah. Aaron?
Yeah. Echo some of it. Yeah. So I, enormous fan of the series. I definitely think that once they didn't have George's books to adapt anymore, I think that the quality started to dip a little bit. They tried to do what George does, which is just let the characters make decisions and let the characters choose where they're going to go in the plot. And when that didn't start immediately working for them, they focused all their efforts on the ending point and how do we get to where we need to be by the ending point. And I think that if they hadn't shortened the season, the last couple seasons, I think that it would be a much more satisfying. I think that the way that we got here would have been much more satisfying. I think that the last episode itself was good, and in that it ended everything as well as it could have given the seasons that preceded it. I think that the seasons that preceded it were so breakneck in their pacing of character motivations, character decisions, and everything that there was, all of that had to lead to where we ended here. And that they were just hitting the most important beats possible. George had already talked to them about some of the things that he was going to do at the ending, and these are some of the important things to hit. And it sort of seemed like a checklist of, we have to make sure that this happens, we have to make sure that that happens, and we might have to make some very spur-of-the-moment choices for these characters to do it. But I think that George has always said that it's going to, that he wants it to end very bittersweet. And I think that that's what ended up happening with the characters. Like, everyone got sort of kind of what they want in some respects, but at a really big cost. And then other people didn't get what they wanted, but it's
what
a
I love
very
about
bittersweet
this show
thing.
Is that nobody really gets what they deserve. You know what I mean? Like, people don't get what they do. You want the satisfaction of seeing somebody really get what they deserve. And none of them did. Like, even just like the way Cersei dies, you just you know, okay. Covered by rocks, and you're just like, that's not even, I didn't Look, even, why would you do that?
You know what? I told my wife, I thought it was kind of a lovely death for her. Like, it was I was like, her, Jamie and her, they fell in love in the womb and they died in a tomb.
You know what they are? They're kind of like this Hansel and Gretel type fairy tale, like, you know, like Snow White. Yeah. She's like the princess and he's Prince Charming.
Yeah.
Right? Except they're warped. Right?
Yeah.
They're related. They're murderous. They're terrible people.
Well,
you know?
Okay. And yeah, Cersei's totally terrible. But, you know, a few seasons ago, they kind of did a face turn with her, you know, like to take a wrestling term, when you start turning the good. When she started getting shamed, like, and they had her walk through the town naked and stuff, like, I remember that season was the beginning. You were like, oh, kind of feel bad for her.
You mean
her,
the face turn before she blew up the Sept?
Which was brilliant. Yeah, it was like, she was like, I was feeling empathy for her, like, oh my gosh. And oh, like, she's so awful, but now they're making her, this other religious fanatic guy is worse. I don't like her. And then she just blew everybody up. And I was like, you were the best heel of all time.
But so that's the thing is, so I think that what Cersei got was too good of a way for her to go. Like, it was too clean and too. So for me, I did not like the way that Jaime's arc ended up. I think that so. In the after the episode thing, when they were talking about the way that Jaime ended up, and they said that he always said that he would die in the arms of the woman he loved, and then he did. What I think is, I think that they had that planned very early on for Jaime, but that the character himself went on to way more growth and way different ways than they might have originally anticipated.
He really evolved.
He evolved so much, and
his
character
hand
grew
got cut
so
off,
much,
and like, and he couldn't do what
finally,
he was before.
Yeah, and he finally learned to that he didn't need Cersei. He chose to leave her when he left her, and finally went to the north, and finally found love again with the only woman that actually saw him for, you know, more than just I'm
had
your
to
brother.
Ask for forgiveness, like, from all these people,
and he had to do all of that, and went through all of this character growth and stuff, and for them to just basically be like, oh, but no, he just goes back to her because we said that he was going to die in the arms of the woman he loved, and we want that to be Cersei. The end.
Oh, but come on, okay, she was carrying his child. His fourth child, right?
After his other ones had all been murdered.
Right.
Yes.
But in different ways, all resulting from her because of her fault. But, like, this was, you got to take out that they're related, right? But, like, there was no other way he should die. Like, he should be with her. Like,
see, I always thought he might be the one to kill her.
Well, a lot of people hypothesized that he was going to be that.
But he was always her protector, right? He's always like he was always trying to protect her in some way, except when he raped her. I mean, you know, there's also that. But what I love about the show, and I love about that, is shows the complicatedness of being human, that you can loathe, you know, you can leave somebody because they were not being honorable, whatever. And he's like, he felt that they needed, he understood the bitter picture that we need to fight. We need to join with them.
Right.
I can't believe you lied. We have to do this or we're all going to die. And I think he only went there really even to protect her. It was like, well, I have to help stop this. And then I don't know that he was in love with Grant. I don't know.
That seemed like love. There was some kind of like that. It was a little bit of a pity fuck because she was a virgin.
Yeah. I definitely think that if that had been the only experience that they had, and if that was the only interaction that they had, I could see that. But for me, their relationship that had grown from him, from her having him as the prisoner, and from both of them finding each other's humanity, I think that there was more than just a pity fuck at that point.
Yeah, I think it was more. Well,
they really built it up in the books. They had like a lot of sexual tension. They built up. Yeah. Like they went on the road. They had a little road trip together. Mm-hmm. You know, that's when he lost his hand.
But the only way that I can accept what we ended up getting was through the lens of addiction. Like they were talking about how Cersei is his addiction, because mm-hmm. addiction is not
love.
Rational.
Love.
And that's the thing, is that like the only way I can accept it is through the lens of addiction, because that's the only thing that would make you leave when you finally found a healthy, happy relationship with someone else.
Have you
it's
never
the only
met
thing,
people before?
It's the, I, that's what I mean, is that like it's the only way that it's the only thing that would make you leave a healthy, happy relationship and go back to your abusive ex is that sort of addiction.
Yeah, I mean, it's
which,
so common.
Which really sucks, though, because... Oh, there was so much character growth, so much yeah. going for him. And I don't know, that I could see through the lens of, but then for the creators and the writers afterward to be like, yeah, remember we said he was going to die in the arms of the woman he loves. Like, it seems like they just wanted to be clever and have that finality of that.
Well, I could see their pushback on people being like, oh, this doesn't make sense. And everyone them going like, well, actually, they're pulling the total nerd thing. Well, actually.
Exactly.
Oh, we did mention this. Actually, if you look back at episode 4, season 3.
We foreshadowed this.
Yeah. So I thought it was a pretty death to a degree, like of them dying together.
It's
I don't know.
Romantic.
I didn't know a way that I would have been satisfied. Because honestly, like, I wanted so many people to kill her. Like, I thought, I was like, well, is Arya?
Arya,
is she going to kill her? Because she said
is she's
going
to wear Jaime's face
said she's
to kill
go
her?
When she's going to, everyone's so mad that she didn't wear a face this season. like, she going to do it? Because she said she's going to kill the queen, mm-hmm. and she keeps her word. She does that. Okay. No, but like, oh, or is Jon going to kill her? Because then, you know, or is Dany going to, like, all these people seem like a good fit. To be the one
that's
to do
why
it.
I wanted Jamie to do it, because he was the one that was closest to her. I thought that would be a really interesting storyline, like a story arc to have the, you know, it's almost like a Greek tragedy or whatever.
To be both the king and the queen slayer too at the end.
But yeah. He would have had to have like a good reason. And I don't think killing everyone in King's Landing. No, he didn't have a good reason to kill her, really.
There was no, the plot did not provide anything other than, you know, he had like, maybe he does fall in love with Brienne, and he's like now got this, you know,
loose end,
this vengeance or whatever for all of our manipulations. And
my only thought of why he was gonna like potentially kill her is I, with the other guy, the pirate, whatever his name was.
Oh, Euron.
Yeah, I think I thought it may be out of anger of him, of she letting him.
See, he didn't even realize. He didn't even find out until literally just before he
right.
found her again.
That was the only yeah. thing that I thought might lead up to that. But I, as people were guessing that, I was like, I don't see this.
That
I don't
dude
see
literally
this
just walked out of the sea to start a fight. Like yeah. what, that. See, that kind of
such
stuff I think is a little contrived. That's part of the
you
part.
Think?
Of, that's where the, you know you're really rushing this ending when you just go like, how are we gonna figure this guy out? It's like just have him walk out of the ocean and we'll have a fight scene with Jaime Lannister on the beach, and then you know. And then he says some jerk off thing at the end, you know, I killed Jaime Lannister,
right.
you know, and then that's like, oh, whatever, dude. Well,
and it's, he didn't. It's the difference too between the adapted seasons and the just on their own seasons too, is that in the adapted seasons, when you have someone on a boat and the boat explodes with Davos, he's stuck on a rock for like days and days and days afterward, because that's what would happen, is you would just get randomly flung in one spot and you're in the middle of the ocean, you can't do anything.
Yeah.
And then you're found by a boat. Is it the boat from your side of the fight or the other side of the fight? You don't know, and you're hoping that yeah. they get to you. Whereas like with Euron, he's on a boat that explodes in the middle of the ocean, and would you look at that, he ends up right where Jaime is, right where he needs to be. And that goes to the two difference, like George lets the characters like choose what they wanted to do and then follows that. Whereas like these guys had their endpoint and they had to reverse engineer it back to that point. So they were like, well, we got to have Euron here with Jaime. So we've got to make this happen
that way. That was just a little too, you know,
Just, oh, I agree. It was very contrived, yeah.
Deus Ex Machina, whatever, to have them do that. I think anybody who's really complaining about it, though, does need to kind of shut up because, you know, the last season is, I don't know how many episodes it was, like half dozen episodes or something, but they busted out, like, some hella cool dragon stuff. They had these epic battles. You know, I mean, the music and the cinematography was just beautiful. All those shots, and I'm like, you know, sitting up on the balustrade with the dragon, looking down at the battle and that kind of stuff. Man, it was beautiful. It was like Lord of the Rings quality, you know.
Yeah.
But every week
we got six, you know, feature length movies.
Yeah, I mean, they really, like, you know, you're talking about like six feature length movies where. Or at least three, if you made two episodes of a movie, you know, let's take a Lord of the Rings trilogy, and they just put it out in 1 year.
Yeah.
Okay, this is what I'm bringing. So Danny getting killed by John, okay? I was shocked that it happened so early in the episode. Same. But then as it went on, I was like, okay, you had a lot to wrap up.
Exactly.
So, okay, I get why that happened. Now, I was reading an article about this, about Jon Snow's journey. And it is interesting, like, Ned Stark died because he was trying to do the right thing, mm-hmm. right? He was trying to do the right thing. And Jon Snow tried to do the right thing and not the morally questionable thing. And in the end, he ends up being morally questionable and killing his queen. He breaks his vow, right? But because it was somebody who... She murdered everybody. Mm-hmm. He did the same thing Jaime Lannister did.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yes, he did.
We all saw Jaime as the bad guy. But, and yeah, he may have been awful, but to a degree, right? He also stopped madness.
Mm-hmm.
And
He's got a little speech about it in the book. In the book, they give him he gets a little monologue about it where he's like, oh, you guys can all fuck off because I'm. You know, the king was mad and you all said he was mad and you all went to war with him, but I was the one that actually got him. And then, you know, but
they gave him some of that in the hot tub with Brienne when he still gets a monologue like that in the show, too, which is very nice.
But, you know, you can't think like, you know, the vow is more important. It's chivalry. So the vow, your oath that he broke his oath, even though it achieved the end goal, which was to remove the Mad King. Even though, you know, he did what they couldn't do, they still resent him because he broke an oath.
Yeah. That's interesting.
And because it's like Ned left his king when he thought that his king was doing too much. Because when Robert was going to murder Daenerys, he was like, I'm not going to be a part of this. I'm out. That's when he quit being Hand of the King. That you've got Jon, who is like turns his back on his queen when he realizes that's too much. I also did very much, going back to like the cinematography of everything, I did very much like the touch of framing it exactly like Daenerys's vision from the House of the Undying when she was in there and saw the throne and you see the ash/snow coming through the burned roof of the thing. My wife and I actually went back to watch that scene specifically because we thought it might come into play. In that vision, she walks up to the throne and is about to touch the throne in the exact same shot that she eventually does touch it in the last episode, just as she's about to touch it, you hear dragons yelling because she's trying to find her dragons in that episode.
Yeah.
Dragons yelling. She turns and then walks through the door and sees Khal Drogo and her unborn kid. That was a vision of her afterlife. Like, that was a vision of, this is you at the throne, but you don't get to sit on the throne. You don't sit on the throne. You go instead to meet with Khal Drogo and your unborn kid because you will be dead.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wait, do we think she was pregnant?
No. Way back in season one, when she did have a kid, to save the kid, they messed Drogo's mind up and then she ended up losing the kid anyway and stuff like that. So that's that kid from that vision.
Okay.
But both the kid and Drogo were gone at that point.
You know what was weird about that scene, too, is that I was watching it really closely because, you know, the whole show is about her ascension to the throne. And she's standing there and she touches it and she's kind of looking at it and everything. And she's about to sit in it. And then Jon Snow walks in and their whole dialogue begins. She never actually sits on the throne.
Oh. Nah.
She's about to sit down in the throne.
Never gets it.
Right? And she never actually takes the throne. Because Jon Snow comes in, who's her challenger to the throne. And they have like this, you know, and it's like a Greek tragedy, their dialogue, right? And then he has to kill her even though he loves her.
You know, I wouldn't have been happy, even if she didn't turn mad. It's kind of like she was gone most of her life, right? She wasn't around.
Yeah, she was across the sea. Landed,
right? Yeah. So, and for the most part, she didn't interact with everybody else in the show.
Yep.
Right? And so I could see everyone going like, who this?
Yeah.
What? You're going to be our queen? She has no relationship with anybody. Mm-hmm. And I could see why she was paranoid then, becoming like, I think I think the books will probably draw it out more of getting there and realizing, I don't have a relationship with anyone except my soldiers. Like, crap.
And my nephew.
No one's going to be looking.
Yeah.
But she, I mean, there is no reason for anyone to be loyal to her aside from that she's supposed to be.
Yeah, they do a great job, too, of anticipating what the audience is going to be thinking as well, too, because you've got Tyrion, who basically says that when he's like, you know, when you walk through fire and three baby dragons pop out, like, it's easy to believe in destiny at that point. Like, it makes sense that she feels like she's preordained and everything, but... I also like
his
the fact
speech
too,
on the last episode.
I love to his speech on the last episode where he says like what everyone else was saying when Dany flipped her switch and burned all of King's Landing. Everyone was freaking out. Again, most of my complaints with the last seasons or whatever just always come down to if we had a few more episodes, we could have a more believable arc to where we get to and everything. But like he even says, every person that she's burned, all the people she's burned up until now were evil men. Every enemy that she had was a terrible person that you would cheer for and be glad to see her kill.
Yeah.
It's only now when that turns to everyone else that you're like, oh, no, wait, she's just, oh, man. Yeah, she has dragons. Like, it's the nuclear option. Like, you use a nuke on a fly.
She leveled that town.
Yeah.
And it's big. They say, like, a million people live there or something. It's supposed to be really big.
Mm-hmm.
And she just leveled the whole thing.
Yeah, I don't even think they could really show, like, I don't think we get the sense in that turn episode of how much death she caused.
Well, it seemed like the way the dragon flies, it has to come in and then, like, does, like, a row of the flames. And then they show her, like, basically going street by street. So if you played this out in, like, their time frame, she was probably like toasting that town for a good 3-4 hours.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like she had to be really mad.
Yeah.
You know, like that is an angry person who's gonna, you know, spend that much time deliberately torching people, everybody in there. You know, you also have to imagine she's on a dragon and there's people like running through the streets. She can see who they are, she can tell when it's old people and you know, and the infirmed and children.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and then what did she say to make the dragon spit fire?
Jakaris.
Yeah. She's, Jakaris. And then, you know, and then she just toasted a couple of grannies and some, you know. That's pretty evil.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is that, like, I can see there being a more natural arc to getting to that end point in the books because there's more room to breathe and there's more room to plant those seeds that it's not just the bad guys that she goes against, that she's now paranoid against everyone, especially because the books are written from the characters' perspectives. So we'll get a lot more of her thought process as all of this is happening.
Wait,
as well,
they're
too.
First person?
They are. The Red Wedding is told from the point of view of Catelyn Stark.
The
so get ready for that.
The chapters change.
Yeah, the chapters change.
Different chapters are told from a character's first person perspective.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, so you get a lot of the thought process, and it's great because there's unreliable narration going on too. Because this character might know of this situation as being like this and this and this because that's what they heard from a person.
Oh, somebody will hear something.
Yeah,
it helps you. It informs you as the reader, but then another person will be like the first person in that chapter, and then they're going about their business, and they're like, oh yeah, and then so and so is coming to rescue me. It's like, and then you just heard in the chapter before. The other guy's like, yeah, we got him. He's dead.
And you're like, oh, no.
So, like, then, you know, this whole chapter, you're like, oh, this poor person thinks they're going to get rescued or whatever it is, you know. So it's really the way it's written. But see, that's the thing. That's the kind of stuff you can't translate into a show. you know, that's good writing.
I think first person is especially hard.
Yeah.
Well,
and that's why it's like when you see her flip that switch, we don't get an inner monologue of what's happening. Yeah. Whereas in the books, I imagine that it's going to be much more of a understandable and a much more logical. I mean, it's an illogical turn anyway, but
we do have a larger degree of expectation from a series as opposed to a movie, because she did have a couple episodes in a movie, which is the length of this. She'd only have one. She wouldn't have that much time to do her flip, and it would, and that would happen. And we'd be like, oh, well, it's fine. It's a movie. You expect that. But I felt like the moment they were celebrating the Night King and she was having her Starbucks, right?
Right. Of course.
I knew then.
That's when.
I knew she was turning, because she was looking at everything and going.
Well, she's looking at everyone being like, oh, John was so great, right?
She's getting jealous of Jon Snow and how much they love him.
And actually, even before that, when she came to him and said, when he came to her and said, oh, yeah, by the way, we're related. And she's like, wait, so that means you'd have you can maybe get the throne.
Yeah.
She wasn't like, oh, shit, nephew.
Yeah.
We're banging.
Yeah.
Like, this is a problem. No, the first thing she thought of was her throne. And maybe somebody said, well, because, well, you know, they were the original incest family. So maybe it wasn't as like, oh, that's what they did. Who knows?
Yeah, it's just how the Targaryens
are. That's how they
party. Might actually be, you know, an acceptable relationship, far enough apart.
Varys even says as much when when Varys, Tyrion, and Davos are standing on the wall looking at him before the Battle of Winterfell. It's like, well, I mean, you know, it's not uncommon in the Targaryen line to, it's like, it could still work out that way.
So it was, I mean, I saw that, and the moment when they said that episode where she turned, when I saw her hollowed eyes when she'd been alone stewing for like, yep, she's gone. So for me, it was an acceptable, like, oh, we've had a couple episodes here. No, I get it.
For me, it would have been acceptable if she, so this is why I can't wait to get into her head when the books finally get to that one. That's probably not going to be until the second unwritten book at this point. But for me, it was the type of scenario where you've won the battle. Everyone surrendered. The bells are ringing, which Tyrion literally said means that the people are on your side now and not Cersei's side. Like, the people have literally made their choice. So when she tries her excuses later about, like, oh, they chose who they were going to fight, that they were going to fight for the Lannisters, and that's why we got to destroy all our enemies. It's like, I mean, no, like, the people were ringing the bells. They were scared out of their minds.
But but also, that wasn't true. Someone just rang the bell.
There's a ton of yelling of everyone saying, ring the fucking bells, like, ring the bells all through the city. And then the bells start ringing all over the place. And then more bells start ringing. And then every bell is ringing. And the entire city has surrendered to her. And that's when she decides, you know what? Nope. Everyone's dying. And that's the point that I was like, that part was what seemed extreme to me. Definitely not the normal burning. That's, you know, that's her normal MO.
That's what I'm saying. If you look at it, like, she was good 3-4 hours flying a dragon back and forth, burning old people and children everybody.
I think the first half hour is the hardest. And I think once you've done that,
it's just rote memorization of that.
No, I think once you've, you know, I think it is. It's
the first room of younglings. Then after that, you can go full Sith.
Yeah.
Right. Or, I mean, I'm sure for the Nazis, it was like the first time they did one of those awful things. Then they're like, well, it's what we do now.
Yeah.
I guess now I have to just, because I think she probably hit a point. She's like, well, now I just have to go with this. Like, I have to justify.
Now I have to burn everyone on principle.
Now, like, I got to kill everybody.
I liked how they changed. One thing I liked about the show is if you look at her appearance, right? Mm-hmm. Like, at the end of the show, she's wearing these outfits. They're very, you know, they're very linear, you know, like very rough edges to the very fascist looking.
Yeah.
You know, she almost looks like a Gestapo stormtrooper.
Clean lines and everything like that. Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, and in the beginning of the show, like, she's walking around naked more or less for most of the episodes. I mean, you know, they over the course,
never been nice. She just used to be naked.
It's similar because they did something similar with Cersei too. Like, as Cersei's kids died, like, when Tommen finally killed himself, that's when she got like Darth Vader'd up and like went full black clothes and black crown and everything. Like, they, it definitely, the costume department does a great job at showing character's descent or into darkness. Almost
death is one of my that was amazing.
Dominic,
that was
well, because you think like, okay, now they got it all set up, and then nobody thought this kid was gonna
he just walks himself.
I mean, that poor kid, like, he was actually pretty cool, like, he being was such a nice a
sweet
heart.
Sweet boy.
And that's the funny thing, too, is that, like, my wife and I were just saying that out of all the people, out of all the various pawns and all the pieces on the board and stuff, what sucks the worst is Marjorie probably would have been an okay queen because she knew how to play the game, but also genuinely cared about the people in King's Landing. So, like, she probably would have been, if Cersei wasn't, like, being mad at being ousted, like, she probably would have been able to do a pretty good job, and boom. Like,
what? I mean, that these people complain about the, like, oh, dropped plots or whatever. And I mean, but I think back to him killing himself, it was just like, what? Like, I mean, that's how they drop instead of him having to close up a, oh, let me close up this person's storyline, he just killed them. And I mean, so
I think that's actually part of the problem of what happened with the books and what happened with the show is that when you have a major story arc like Ned Stark, for example, and we are all invested in him, and then you kill him off, and then, like you said, the audience reaction is, where's the show go next? And then you give them these other characters to get invested in, and then you kill those people,
yeah,
you know, and then but then what happens is it starts to, you know, it unwinds a bit like a ball of yarn, and you got all these loose ends and these threads going this way and that. And, you know, you have to bring in more characters, and you have to, those characters have to be compelling, and then you have to kill them. And, you know,
I do not understand the obsession on having a series finale have to be closure on everything.
Yeah.
I don't understand that. Like, why does every mystery or thing that happened have to be tied up at the end? That's not very realistic to life, right?
And when it does happen, like, it ends and you're sort of like, ah, everything was tied up in a bow. I have no more lingering thoughts on it. Oh.
And even for this, I was like, okay, what? John ends up in the north where he was the happiest, right? It was his best time, right?
North. He's going to find himself another egret.
Yeah. And I was curious. I was actually wondering, I don't know if he's going to stay at the Night Watch. I think he was going off.
Oh, no,
what
Night definitely.
Watch? There's no Night's Watch.
No, there is still.
No.
There's still a Night's Watch.
Oh, there is?
That's
where he was sent.
Yeah.
To be with the Night Watch.
There will always be a
need. I thought those were all North people in there.
There was a mix of Wildings and Night's Watch.
Yeah. They opened the door.
But all the people that left, though, were all Wildlings. It looked like they were just sort of going to go back to wandering where they were wandering.
He was like, I'm out of here. Arya, she gets to go off and travel.
She gets to colonialize whatever's left.
But that's something she talked about early on that she wanted to do. Sansa.
Well, and also, you're Arya. You killed the Night King. You've trained with the House of Black and White. Regular life is mundane. It's way too mundane for you at this point. You need to go off.
She's a swashbuckler now.
That's exactly. Her. Yeah. Like,
they could do a whole show that's just her swashbuckling.
Absolutely. I was very satisfied. It felt very true to her character.
Wouldn't that be great if Massey Williams as doing Errol Flynn shit for just a whole season?
She'd make a great Dread Pirate Roberts.
She would, wouldn't it? Really? Seriously.
Sansa gets Winterfell. I mean, that was very satisfying.
Well, this show is kind of about that family. Like,
right. But I was like,
you don't really know until the end.
I would have been so pissed if she had died more than anybody. She was the one I wanted to see make it.
Oh, yeah.
And I would have been fine if she ended up.
Her character evolution is great, too, because she, you know, she starts out as this innocent girl who's, you know, she's into boys and puppies.
So here's something I wanted to ask about with her character. And I wanted the women here to deal with this. Like, there was a line that made a lot of people mad about when she's like, she says, well, if it hadn't been for them, I wouldn't be who I am.
Yes.
And people were very mad about that. And I do understand the point of view of it basically seeming like it's okaying sexual assault.
Yeah, like, right? It's okay that this person sexually assaulted you because...
Well, like, how I took it is like, well, but there is a point, and I think it becomes more because of George's history of all these rapes in the show. But, like, that she got to a point that she's like... Because, okay, I grew up in a house where my stepfather was very abusive to my mother. And that was awful. And it shouldn't have happened to her, but it did shape who I am. It shaped who my mom is now. Like, we all, like, everyone has shitty things. the shitty things in your past do make you who you are. The positive things in your past make you who you are. And I think there is a point that you come to terms with, like, I can't change this, so I can't dwell on it. And now I need to move forward.
I'm actually glad that you brought this up. So, my wife was hoping that we would get to talk about this. Yeah. Actually, I'm not a woman. I don't speak for women, but I'm going to at least say what my wife wanted me to say for this, yeah, because my wife is a survivor of assault as well, yeah, too. And she has gone through abuse and everything. And so she said this even before Game of Thrones, like, she has always said and maintained through life that I went through some really shitty situations and I went through terrible happenings, but they shaped me for who I am today. And basically paraphrased exactly what Sansa ended up saying, because that's the thing, is pretending like it was extremely bad that these things happened and extremely traumatic, and I would never wish it on anyone.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you can't pretend like it never happened. You can take what you can from that and eke out, you know, stuff to go forward with, and that you don't want to let that define you. You don't want to always be the victim, basically. And she took that and lived her life and continued on. And basically, like, she's like, if this sort of things didn't happen, I never would have done this, and I never would have done this, which never would have brought me here, which never would have brought her to where she is now, like, with a, you know, little cute little baby and stuff.
It's kind of amazing when you think about, like, when you're watching a TV show, to actually have a character, you know, it starts out as relatively innocent, and then you literally
hated her.
I know.
Hated Sansa in the beginning. What a whiny little bitch. You just wanted Pat, like, oh, I'm going to marry a little prince. And yeah. Hated her.
Yeah. And then you see all these terrible things happen to her, this abuse that we're talking about. You actually witness it. You're spectating, you're watching it, you know? And then you see what it does to her, and you see, you know, then you start to feel really, she's in a really bad spot for a while. She's like, got to get out of Dodge, because, you know, people are literally at this point going to try and kill her. And yeah. And then now she's on the run with this questionable seedy guy. He's kind of pimping her and all this other stuff. And, you know, she went through some very, very dark places as a character. And we, you know, we had to sit there and watch it. But then to see her at the end, you know, to watch her grow and to see what she becomes when she finally gets her chance at, you know, when she survives all that and she's back in Winterfell where she feels like she's supposed to be, and then she's in control, and you see how composed she is and how she conducts her business, and it's a lot, you know, it's a lot different than what you're expecting at the beginning. But it's kind of amazing that the show actually, you know, gave us that character arc. It's a really amazing character, and a lot of the characters are like that, where you see them develop and turn into something.
It honestly was one of the, like, objectively most happiest endings based on, like, everyone in the series, as far as, like, she didn't really have to give up. And ultimately, she didn't have to, like, we lost a lot of Northmen and stuff like that. But, like, for Jon, like, he had to kill the woman he loved in order to save, you know, the realm and everything. And all these other people had great cost to get what they ended up getting. And then she finally was able to be like, hey, the North just saved everyone from the White Walkers. Can we maybe have our own place now? Mm-hmm. Like, we just did y'all a solid. Can we please?
Well, there's two Starks. The thing is, you know, when your brother's the king of the realm and you're like, hey, you know, bro, can we?
We're not.
I definitely would have been okay with her as the queen. Like, ultimately, I definitely do think that the lack of representation in the writer's room led to they've got to have a penis, and, like, it's got to be a dude, a ruling at the very end. I think that there were a couple options that would have.
Okay, do you think is it the case of the room not being diverse, or that the world that they created to suddenly switch it? I mean,
still, I definitely think that going full democracy, like Sam said, would have been a very big stretch. though I think he could have made a better case if he brought up the fact that the Night's Watch have been using democracy for hundreds of years to elect their night commanders. Like, hey, it worked for our Night's Watch. Maybe
they kind of did a democratic thing. They voted as nobility. You know, it's like the House of Lords versus House of Commons.
More like a plutocracy instead of a democracy.
Yeah. But you know, it should be pointed out that Bran is handicapped, and it is interesting, you know, and
that's true.
There was that one line in the episode where he reunites with Jon Snow. And he's like, wow, you've become a man. And he says something like almost or not quite or something like that.
Yeah, penis don't
not,
work.
Not yet.
Right. You know, there's
he doesn't say that, but he does just say not yet. And I think you're right that it's a subtle foreshadowing almost.
Well, I think there was some kind of thing. I don't know. It seemed like it was alluding to that. But you know, they did. It was interesting how they were like, here's somebody who's not going to procreate. And, you know. It was an interesting choice. The way that Tyrion spelled that logic out to get to him. It was also like a little bit of it seemed to me almost like a game show. Like Tyrion comes out as the host, and he's like Bob Barker at the end. He's like, now let's see who wins the Iron Throne. And it is, you know.
I do like, you know, I like the way they played the scene because it did seem somewhat believable. I didn't know how they were. I'm like, how are you going to pick someone now? Like, what are they going to do? And I didn't know if they were going to make him king or something right then. And they, oh, by the way, we decided you're king because his crime doesn't matter anymore. what you did.
The time jump threw me a little bit because I didn't even realize that it was, you know, at least a few weeks, maybe even a month or two since Jon and Tyrion, like since Jon stabbed Daenerys, because like he's still in the dungeon. All those people couldn't have come down in that short of a
It looked
of time.
Like it was a couple months later.
And it's not winter anymore. Like, yeah. And so like there was a big time jump there. And it seemed like it was just happened exactly after Jon stabbed Daenerys, like the next day almost. And for a while that threw me until I'm like, I think this is ways later.
And so Jon obviously told Unsullied, I just murdered her.
He's a Stark at heart. Like,
Jon is the dumbest.
He's the honorable to a fault.
Like, he couldn't have been king, right? Because he was too dumb.
Yeah.
Like, he could have just said
nothing. He knew nothing.
he literally could have just said, the dragon went crazy and just took her. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
She said something about scouting out some place over somewhere and the dragon flew away.
Aren't these people like, that's like the thing though. They all love her and they're all like watching her and they all got her back. Somebody would see the dragon taking a limp-bodied.
Oh no, but I'm well. Khaleesi yeah, well, at least holding. Well, that's why he's like the dragon killed her. I didn't do it. She was the love of my life. You know that. I loved her as I loved her as my lover thing. And a family member.
That's the thing, though. He's ultimately still Ned Stark's son, and that's exactly Ned Stark would be like. Yeah, I totally did it.
He had a lot of challenges, though, I think, because that was actually one of the things that they did in the show with his character, because he was such a moralistically, like, black and white. Like, he always sort of like, we're doing what's right, what's right, what's right, blah, 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 what's right. That was his big thing the whole time. But then they made him, like, a double agent, right? They sent him north of the wall, pretending not to be in the Night's Watch anymore, and they made him a double agent. Yeah. And then, you know, he fell in love with this woman, which you're not supposed to do in the Night's Watch, you know. And then they, you know, because of that betrayal, he ended up losing all of his, the allegiance of the people. There was still resentment over this, you know, which is how he ended up getting murdered by his own troops.
Yeah.
Right. And then, you know, like all of these situations, there's all these situations where Jon Snow is like, got to choose. They always kept sticking his character in these moral dilemmas, which was interesting to watch because he was like, what's right and what's wrong? And he was so adamant about it. And that's why I think it's compelling at the end when he has to choose, you know, and it's they do strip it down. There's no bells and whistles. It makes it very clear that this whole episode is about Jon Snow and, you know, his choice. He's the one that has the choice. And, you know, and he has to decide, is he going to let her run her reign and serve her? Or is he going to take her out? Cause she just murdered the whole city.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then, you know, that's a hard thing for him to do, especially
want the Unsullied taking care of us either, because they were totally cool with like, oh yeah, if she wants us to murder everybody, we'll just murder everybody.
Unsullied are gone now. They went back. Well, I know. They sailed off to Narth.
Exactly. Because I'd be like, let's get them out of here. Because
Davos they is ready to give him the reach. The reach is probably like, hey, Davos, maybe talk to us first, please.
Oh, I love
it. Everyone's giving everyone shit without us knowing.
I love how they just hand out these lands. Like, the people who live there is like, nope, this guy's, you're like, oh, yeah, you remember all of those Tyrells? Yeah, they're gone. This guy, Bronn, he's your guy now. He's like, kiss
this,
his ass.
This mercenary will be your master of coin now. Hello.
Okay, oh, I did love everybody who sat around the table. Is there ultimately they were honest, right? I mean,
what do you mean?
All the advisors for Bran, like, ultimately they were people trying to do the good thing, right?
Except Bronn, maybe. Bronn does what Bronn wants,
but
ultimately, at the end of the day,
he was sent to kill.
Bronn won't be a super
Bronn
dick about
it. Bronn had a code, and he actually lived
up to
it.
He said, hey, go kill Jaime, and he's like, he goes, and I'm supposed to kill you. Give me a better offer.
Yeah.
Right?
But that was part of his code.
Yeah. Like, okay.
He's got a little bit of that Han Solo side to him.
Yeah.
Okay. Night King. The Night King was the big thing with people. Were you upset that it didn't end with the Night King? Like, that wasn't the...
I think as far as, like, the way the story opens, this is like the big bad, right? Is these ice zombies, and they make you feel like that's going to be the driving force of the show. But when you're watching the show, if you actually look at the amount of time that they spend with the White Walkers, it's actually not the majority of the show. The majority of the show is about the political intrigue of all of these people literally stabbing each other in the back to get more power. So, because that's where King's Landing was really where the focus of most of the show was, what was going on there. The thing in the north and the wall, and it was supposed to be like this sort of thing that's happening over there with this looming evil, and we don't really know what's going on. They did, really amp that up. They had a dragon that breathed ice that put a hole in the wall, and that was a big moment, and then... they had a lot of really cool ice battles, and they were fighting that army. But there was other armies fighting other, that's the problem with the show is that it's sprawled. And I think that people try to make this the main part of the show, but I think it was just part of the show's sprawl, because all of the stuff happening over across the sea and Marine and all that stuff, that wasn't had anything to do with King's Landing either.
Right.
So as if you kind of take Danny's story and then the Ice King story, and that is ice and fire right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They sort of had that balance sort of in the periphery of what was going on. They resolved a lot of that. And I thought he was a pretty good bad guy. I really liked the way they did that. I think they had a lot of great battles. And again, I know people want to complain and everything, but Jesus, if you look at that Battle of Winterfell episode, it was intense, and it had all of this really cool.
We all had our properly calibrated television, so we had no issue.
You better believe it.
Oh, I just turned all the lights off. But they, they really hit the marks, right? Because they got the best parts of Lord of the Rings, and then they got, and there's all these like these flames and stuff too. They had like extra dragons, and man, it was, it was good TV, good entertaining, intense, TV. Uh-huh. So people were like, well, they should have ended the show with the, And I'm like, hey, they did that. And then they turned around and they did a whole nother battle. And then they had like this Greek tragedy style ending, And then they had to do like a little epilogue thing for 5 minutes to tell you who actually ends up taking over, But they even down to like the poignant imagery of the dragon literally melting the MacGuffin of the whole show. The Game of Thrones, and then at the end the throne itself is literally destroyed. I thought
don't need a throne when you have a chair.
Now it's the iron ramp so that Bran can access it. He was really just starting the Westeros Disabilities Act.
WDA.
George has always said that the Night King and the White Walkers, he meant for it to be an allegory for climate change, and that he legitimately did.
Really?
Yes. And that it was this encroaching threat that no one really is taking seriously until everyone should be taking it seriously and that it's potentially world ending. Legitimately, he wrote them as an allegory for climate change. So I've seen some people that are mad that they were like, so his solution for climate change is stab one part of it and then the climate's all good. But
it's an allegory for Trump supporters. It's this looming.
A climate change Arya Stark.
Exactly.
Like somebody
yeah.
just comes out of nowhere and stabs the carbon Al Gore content.
Here's the other complaint that I've seen about it too is that since the Night King never talked, we never knew their goals. And part of it is if it is meant as an allegory for climate change, it's not a man versus man conflict. It's a man versus nature conflict. And the White Walkers represent just a force of nature just constantly marching down until they're done. The other side of that too, though, is we do know the Night King's the whole deal because when Bran wore Three-Eye Ravens, we find out that the Children of the Forest found that humans were encroaching on their turf. So the Children of the Forest created the Night King as like their nuclear option, their Hiroshima, basically, to be like, okay, here's the Night King, and his sole purpose is to take out every human, basically. Mm-hmm. And so he doesn't talk a lot, but we at least get the basest amount of motivation, which is he's on autopilot right now. He's just fulfilling the first order that he ever got, which is just take everyone out. Like, that's his whole deal. And I think that ending it where they did in the season and making the final thing about the throne, it's funny you bring up Lord of the Rings, because George R. R. Martin has always said too that like that was a big influence on him when he was writing stuff. And yeah, he wants to subvert a lot of the classic fantasy tropes, but I think that ending it with the throne when your big bad that you've been building up is all this time has already been taken out is very similar to Lord of the Rings, because in Lord of the Rings it was cut for the movies, but in Lord of the Rings they finally finish off Mount Doom, like, or the One Ring's gone, cool, Sauron defeated, they go home, Saruman controls the Shire, and Saruman didn't die, and Saruman now has enslaved all the hobbits in the Shire, and there's a whole like separate random adventure happening at the end of this book, and you're like, the big bad's already done, like we won, but there's this weird little like epilogue mini adventure that happens after that. And I think that this is George's homage to Tolkien is that this is his Shire invasion, basically, is the finale of this afterward. So I think that ending it where he did with the White Walkers was fine, because that was the big bad, and here is my super extended resolution afterward, basically.
I had heard from people that the whole show, the whole point of it was to lead up to, we need to put our petty squabbles to the side and fight the real bad. Like, that was it. But for me, it was like the show was called Game of Thrones. I want to know who sits on the throne at the end. That was the Night King was a side thing. I don't think they say he was easily beat. And I'm like, well, Arya had to go train for like a year to be an assassin in order for the,
you had to invest a lot in that character to believe that she was actually even capable of doing that.
Yeah.
Like, we all believe she's capable of that because of the stuff we've already seen her achieve.
Yeah, there's a huge setup for her to be able to do that and to sneak in and get it. And yeah, maybe it was a stab. But
that's why I also like that they didn't just have her go around and kill everybody. Like, they could have had her just like, I killed the Night King, I killed Cersei, I killed Daenerys. Yeah. Right? She could have just gone around and killed everybody. But really, they just saved her for the one, you know, a pretty important
sort of a red herring that he kept thinking she's going to kill Cersei.
Right.
She's going to.
Or Daenerys.
Or Daenerys. Yeah, yeah. Daenerys. Like, one of them, like, no.
She did. No. You know, there were a few on the show, a few mass extinctions. You know, there was a few times when they just had to, like, okay, we're going to kill everybody in the room. And she was one of the times when she was up at the Frey Castle.
Yeah, the twins, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to kill everybody in the room. And she did, you know.
Yep.
Except for the lady pouring wine. I think that was
his wives that were there and the attendants. She let them go because they were innocent casual. They were just innocent bystanders as opposed to actively Freys trying to kill Starks.
And had she brought out her mask again, or if she had been sitting under the tree and took off the face of Bran or something, I feel like it would have just been going back to this gimmick that we already kind of used. a bunch. Like, I just would have felt like we didn't need that callback. That experience was done. Like, how do you feel? Like, were you disappointed she didn't do it one more time?
Nah, not especially with how breakneck of the pace that everything else was. Like, there was no need to gum it up even more by being like, and then this like misdirection and stuff like that. Like, she was already badass enough to just walk up and or just jump out and stab someone at that point. Like, she's like, I'm Arya Stark. I just survived all of that bullshit earlier in the episode. Like, can I just jump and stab you, please?
Well, Arya's story is also interesting because she does, you know, it's a coming of age story, right? Like, she goes through all these things and then she comes back and then, you know, there's definitely the moment, the ooh la la moment where she hooks up with a Gendry, right? And then after that, her character, you know, does continue to sort of change and evolve. She's very impulsive when she's younger. When she's younger, she's like making the list of all the people that she wants to kill.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's very stubborn and kind of pigheaded. And then now she's like, she's got a lot more nuance, right?
Yeah.
She knows what she's good at. She knows what she's not good at. She definitely, like, she never got along with her sister before. And now she, like, trusts her sister implicitly, you know, which that was like her mortal enemy before. Because she was just a little girl, right? And then now she's grown and, like, you know, all of those impulses, a lot of those teenage impulses.
And she can see that her sister's grown just as much, too, yeah. In different ways.
And
yeah.
Then, you know, and now they're, you know, she's an adult and she's got these skills, you know, she's going around doing stuff. But even at the end, she, like, you know, they had the little moment with her and the Hound and he's like, don't be like me, kid. And she's like, okay, you know, thanks. And then, you know. I thought that was kind of irritating because I was like, you did make us go all this way with her. And she did just take out this other big bad guy. Is she going to do anything else? But then, you know, and the thing with the white horse is, what the fuck
she
is
wasn't
this?
Even on the horse when the first time you see her on the next episode.
I know. You see her in the next
episode.
There was
nothing for that horse.
Walking around and you're like, whoa.
I just sort
what
of
what happened to the horse?
I consider that the Ridley Scott unicorn and Blade Runner horse that's just there because I wanted a horse there at that one point.
It was that horse was there because they wanted a pretty horse.
They wanted the imagery of the pale horse so they could be like, look, do you see the pale horse that she's riding? Like the pale horse of death? And then be like, and then the next episode she's walking in the rubble of King's Landing. And you're like, what
happened to your horse?
Did that horse even exist, or was she clip-clopping down the streets of King's Landing by herself?
Maybe they behind her making the noise.
Maybe they ate it.
Okay. Obviously, we could talk about this for ages, but there's so much more. This could be a 12-part episode just digging into all these seasons. But sort of as a final thought, like, is there anything about that we hadn't hit in particular before I had my final question? I don't know if there wasn't a topic.
No, I honestly think that just most of the disappointments that I have from the last couple seasons, I feel like could all be solved if they had given themselves a few more episodes to breathe, so that it wasn't quite as breakneck of a pace. I think that was mainly the showrunners just being like, they set up at the beginning that they were like, we always thought that it was a 76 episode show, and it's like, it's the beginning of the show. It's a lot of stuff could change between here and now. And I think that it has. And I think that they wanted to stick to the 76. And I think had we gotten a few more, that most of my critiques stem from that. And that I whining past that is just whining for whining's sake at that point. That it's
and
just,
I mean,
like,
we did get extended episodes in this.
Yeah.
Get us
some of those
battles.
Episodes were really, like, I was surprised. I didn't check the timestamp before watching them. And I was like, you know, like, is this episode still going? Like there's a lot of, and it was always the ones with the big battles too. So it was like, oh my God, they just, you know, they just kicked a lot of ass on this episode. Oh, it's still going.
Yeah.
Like, they're still doing stuff.
I would say a lot, some of the complaint, and even about doing more episodes or another season, like, we don't know. Filmmaking television is very complicated. And if these people were contracted for a certain number of seasons, to make sure that they could have everybody, like, the amount of money it could have ended up costing them, like, to make sure John comes back for one more season.
Well, that's why with a show like this, you can just kill him off. That's what happened to, what's her name?
Charges too much and they
on Walking Dead.
Well, they could do that, but how far do they want to be from the book, what the book's going to end up being? If they knew, like, okay, we're trying to match at least to, you know, we got to get the brand.
Yeah, but they had to make other compromises. They've been making compromises.
You can't change the king.
For the show.
They changed, well, like, well, Tyrion was the only one who would come back, so we made him king. Okay, so last one. I'd like to... do you have a favorite or maybe a couple favorite moments from the show? Like a big surprise reveal death that sticks out to you when people like, well, what was the best, like a best moment, top moment of
Game of Thrones? Oh man, that's, well, the show, I think, you know, it's weird to think about your life, where you were and what you were doing when the show started, right? Because it's been a while. We've all been invested in, if you've been watching from the beginning, you've been invested a while. But I would have to say that the Red Wedding was, people were already kind of on edge about this show because of what they did to Ned Stark. But when they did the Red Wedding, it seemed like it was a cultural phenomenon. I mean, people were making jokes about it. It became a punchline in and of itself. You know, like you get a paper cut and you got the tiniest little drop of blood and you're like, oh my God, it's the Red Wedding. You know,
someone play the Reigns of Castamere.
Yeah, on the Reigns of Castamere, you know, like there's a whole like thing that went along with it. And then, like that moment. But then also I think like kind of the inverse of that was the falling of the wall. Like that, when the wall fell, I think that like that was another big moment for me. There was some moments like that where, you know, it was like, oh, this is going to change the game. Because after the Red Wedding, you're like, okay, now what's going to happen?
It's funny you mentioned that too, because one of my moments is actually after the Red Wedding, because I remember that the Red Wedding shocked me so much. I was like, oh my God, like anything can happen in this show. And it was the next season that Oberyn Martell was introduced and the Mountain versus the Viper. And I was like, this guy is so fucking cool. Like he oozes coolness just from the moment you see him. He's not even playing any political games. He's like, oh yeah, I'm here to kill the Mountain because he raped and murdered my sister. Like, it's fine. Like, I'm not here to play games. That's what I'm here for. And if I get the chance, I'm going to kill him. And so it's like, it was refreshing to see someone just being so upfront about it. He can just live his whole life. And that was the moment that it got it for me, because he won. He won the fight. And it was because as soon as he started grandstanding and started talking, it's really cool. Actually,
he did a touchdown dance is what happened.
It's really interesting too, because the moment that he takes his spear out of him, the camera does a very cool thing where it's like the camera shot moves from him to down near his legs so that it reminds you how close he is to the Mountain, so that if you remember, like, oh shit, no. And it was as soon as he died, I'm like, oh, so they're not even safe in their own season they were introduced. Okay. Yeah. Like, you introduced him like a few episodes ago. Like, come on. I loved this guy.
We liked him too. He was hanging out. He was banging kind of people. You know,
I love this guy, and now he's gone. I'm like, okay,
like
cool.
Crazy. Like, he's party playboy.
Yeah, like even more than the Red Wedding. That's what convinced me of this show's, like, literally no one is safe. We introduced him a few episodes ago. You love him, and now he's dead. Take that. This is our show. And I'm like, oh, okay.
I think for me, my favorite moment where I felt the most satisfied was Sansa and Arya's setup. Of Littlefinger.
Oh yes, that was satisfying.
That was that was so happy. I wanted him. He was someone else. I was like, we got it. He's got to die, right? Yeah. That was such a wonderful turn, and like especially
using every one of his stuff.
His acting in that scene really pulled it too. Because when you see, because he's all smug and he thinks he knows what's gonna happen, and he's. Through the whole show, you're like, why does this guy always know what's going to happen?
Yeah.
Because it was like him and Tyrion and Varys. And, you know, they were the ones that knew what was going to happen. And then, when his face, when like he has that what the hell moment, when his face is like, what TF just happened, you know? And then he kind of realizes, and then he's like, you know, you can see the panic. He did a really good job just conveying the emotion. You know, the realization and the panic of realizing, and then
he knows he's done.
Well, and I really loved how Sansa and Arya played that scene as well, too. Because, like, you see Sansa pulling out every trick that he ever taught her to be like, hey, guess what? Everything that you've been systematically showing me about trying to groom me about how to play the game, guess what? I've learned how to play the game, and now I'm using it. Every one of your dirty tricks against you right now, and now you're dead because of it. And just she played that scene so well too, just so evenly of just like, yeah, this I'm coldly destroying you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about all the time we can do on this right now. Hey, thank you two for coming in and talking about that. This was something Manny and I started talking about doing more of, like when there's big endings to something like
culturally significant.
Yeah, like this year, like you know, I think once the next Spider-Man movie is out, that's supposedly their last the film of that end. Phase. So then we're gonna kind of talk about that. I think we may do it with Star Wars if I can stop crying.
There's a lot of endings happening. You know, a lot of ending of the eras happening this year.
A lot of sadness happening. who knows? Maybe we'll do it for Barry when that ends. It's Barry's so good. Check that out.
Veep special next week.
But yeah, thank you. So thank you, Joe and Aaron. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in for the special Black and a Half episode of number 65, Game of Thrones.
Quick props to Ramin Djawadi as well, too. Carried the entire series with his composing.
Now I kind of want to like sing the song, but I'm like,
I was about to sing the song, and then I'm like, oh, wait, he's the whole reason I want to sing the song. Good job.
We should come up with lyrics for it now.
Jack Black already beat you to it.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
We could do it a cappella, like,
somebody, oh God! Somebody no one wants to hear that.
Somebody has to be in the melody. Come on!
Oh my God!
All right, that was terrible.
Yep.
Black and a Half.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission.